Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're kicking off our end-of-year fundraising drive with a special discount offer from our partner, Heritage Foods USA, an online farm-to-table butcher shop specializing in heritage breed antibiotic-free meats. Donate to Heritage Radio Network before Sunday, December 4th at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and we'll send you an exclusive discount code for 10% off all Heritage Foods products. Help ensure another year of great food radio, get 10% off delicious and sustainably produced meat, and support small family farms all in one shot. How's that for a holiday miracle? Head to heritageradionetwork.org/donate by Sunday, December 4th to make your contribution.
Hi, this is Greg Bresnitz, one half the host of Snacky Tunes. We have had the honor of being nominated by Taste Awards for Best Radio Show and Best Podcast. Please head to bit.do/stvote in order to vote for Snacky Tunes and other food favorites. Once again, that's bit.do/stvote. And a big congratulations to Heritage Radio Network for being nominated into the Hall of Fame. Thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth, Wisconsin, makers of the world's best cheese and pioneers in the U.S. artisan cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses a Seizure, as you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. Talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz, sitting on top of Mitte, really, in an incredible loft that we're moving into, right? This is just like, this is us, this is a lease signing. I'm with Tommy and Johnny of The Store, or Stores, as we will kind of figure out, which is located inside Soho House, but not totally connected to it. Before we kind of talk about The Store, it'd be great to kind of get your background, Johnny. I know that you grew up cooking in the English countryside.
Yeah.
Kind of curious on that back, how a nice London lad ends up here.
Well, I mean, my mom is a gardener, garden designer. My dad is a wine merchant, and I'm in the middle of three boys. And, I mean, food was just a very big part of our growing up. We were always, like, picking veg from the garden, having people to stay, people walking in and out for dinners, and, you know, generally sitting down at the table was kind of the focal point of the day. And I just kind of started cooking, you know, from a young age, just helping my mom and doing, like, sandwich competitions with my brothers. And that's how I first kind of got into food.
Sandwich competition just between the three
brothers. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
What was the winning sandwich?
Well, I mean, it was always quite competitive and quite heated.
I mean, but who was the judge?
Like all three of us, and sometimes mom as well.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the little brother was, you know, he's a bit younger than us, so his sandwiches used to consist of like ketchup and baked beans and things like that. We put a lot of effort into these sandwiches. But that's kind of the first time I got into taste and flavor, and you know, really kind of making the effort with food a little bit and using like nice produce in order to actually get like a nice result.
And would mom let you go into the? You said she was a garden designer. Would she actually let you go in and kind of like ransack it, or it's like, this is the boys' section, do not touch?
Well, no,
side.
I mean, like the herb and veg garden was open to everyone. Okay. There were some flower beds that, you know, our football pitch got smaller and smaller as the years went by, and those flower beds were often the series of many an argument. But in terms of herbs and veg stuff that we used to cook, it was, you know, open to everyone to go and grab.
And you said your dad was a wine merchant,
yeah,
which is pretty amazing. So, I mean, that obviously must have had some influence on you as well from, like, the, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, like, you know, his dad was a perfumier, I don't know, sorry. And then, so obviously that involves, like, you know, smell and taste. And then my dad got into the wine business, you know, 40 years ago and, you know, worked for, you know, set up a, you know, a big importer of wine in London. And we were, you know, he was always making us try things from, you know, a very young age. I think I had my first glass of champagne age 8 or something like that. And I think that kind of focus on quality and how things taste and how they can change, you know, from the air or things like that was, you know, a really big part of, like, my influence in food and also, you know, wine as well.
I mean, it's an unbelievable pairing, if you will, between the mom and the dad of getting you ready for what became your career.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I have never undertaken any formal training as a chef. I've never been to cooking school, had a cooking lesson, or actually worked in a professional kitchen. I've worked in restaurants before this, but on the front of house side. And, you know, the idea wasn't necessarily that I would take on the chef role, but when Tommy and I started, you know, we didn't have many other people and we just kind of got stuck into it and just did everything together.
So Tommy, your background as well too is pretty diverse and kind of a little bit all over the map.
It is. I mean, I was born and raised in London. My mother's Chilean and I kind of grew up with my stepfather who's Dutch, but he'd like also lived around the world. He lived in Venezuela for 15 years. He kind of left Holland when he was about 18. So he had a kind of very outward looking perspective on food, especially because his dad had a restaurant as well in Holland. And so
do you remember the restaurant name?
Yeah, it's called Seidel. We kind of grew up really loving food and really making a big effort in terms of food because London was a very different place in the 90s or the 80s even. This is like before Ottolenghi, kind of before River Cafe, before the supermarkets kind of really took control. You know, and we used to have to go to like an Indian shop to buy nice mangoes, or we had this Iranian shop we used to go where they'd buy like smuggled Iranian caviar from like Iran Air pilots. I remember once like being really shocked, we bought it and we opened the can up and it was just full of sawdust. Those are the risks.
Where do you complain?
I know, of course. But we were, you know, he was, because of that, I kind of grew up with a very strong appreciation of French cooking and Spanish cooking, because we used to go to holidays in Spain every year, and about produce and eating a lot of vegetables. We never really ate much red meat. We ate a lot of vegetables. We ate things like artichokes, which were quite, you know, exotic in England in the 90s. I remember friends coming around and not even knowing what to do with the leaves and the hearts and the choke. So yeah, that's kind of where I grew up around.
And you also do food journalism as well, right?
I did. Yeah, I mean, that's how I kind of got into food. Not as, again, not at all formally trained or anything, just from a more critical perspective. I was writing about food. I was the editor of Time Out here in Berlin, so I wrote the guidebook and the website, and I kind of saw the Berlin food scene kind of evolve from that side of things.
And, it's a very broad strokes question, but how have you kind of seen it evolve? And we can just say to the last 5 years, you know, what are, like, you know, two or three key takeaways that it's changed?
Well, I would say, so the street food scene, of which, you know, I'm biased because I kind of do have, I have a street food market, which I started as well, has really helped.
Call
push
it
things.
Out.
Mm. Yes, Bike Club. that's, along with Street Food Thursday and other events, has really helped the scene evolved, because you've had a lot of young people moving here from all over Europe who want to cook. And the nice thing about Berlin is you don't need much money to start something up, so especially not a street food stall or a truck or something, so you can get really stuck in immediately. And I think a lot of the thing was, well, firstly, Germany is very much obsessed with training, so there's this, you know, people are trained specifically to do certain professions. You don't come into a profession from having learned something else. So chefs are, like, very heavily trained. They have certificates. You know, for example, to be a baker, you have to have done a certain master's in bakery to open a bakery, or to be able to take apprentices on, you have to have a certain training. So it kind of took this big movement of young people that has kind of basically happened since the recession, because people who come from Spain and Italy with a lot of skills and a lot of food knowledge to places like Berlin and Germany, where there's a bit more of a kind of stable economy, and just got into it and not cared about regulations or training, or, and so that's really moved things along in terms of the street food scene.
And then, so how did you two connect?
Well, we actually used to hang out when we were like 17.
Oh.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, not like, you know, very close friends or anything like that, but, you know, a few parties that we both went to, and kind of knew quite a lot of mutual people. And then when I got kind of asked to move to Berlin to help set up the store kitchen in the stores, you know, I needed someone who knew this Berlin food scene, who knew suppliers, producers, you know, knew kind of what the kind of, you know, populace wanted, and knew where, like, you know, they wanted to take, you know, a new concept to. And kind of by chance, Tommy was coming in to talk to the guys who set up the stores about events with his street food market and other things as well. And he walked in, obviously we recognized each other, and the boss was like, oh, that, you know, you guys know each other, that kind of works. Yeah. And then, yeah, we just kind of got stuck into it together, and that's, you know, it's kind of strange how things work out that way, but, you know, that's often always quite a good sort of you know, foundation for things moving forward well.
I mean, if I have my count right, you have a writer, front of house experience, wine, food, pop-up events. Like, between the two of you, it's like pretty much all the ground that you would need to cover. So what were early days like? You know, what were kind of like, you know, the beginning of the concept? And we can talk about how it is now a little bit later, but just, you know, set the scene a little bit. And what year was this?
Well, it was late 2014.
Yeah, exactly.
And we were doing a sort of very soft opening here. The place was still, you know, half, sort of almost half built. I mean, there's not much building having gone on. It's mostly furniture. But we were in the back cooking off a home induction stove, which was just there as a sort of part of a show kitchen, as part of a co-working space. But we started working off that and did everything there, all the prep, all the cooking. We had you know, very little facilities, but we worked with that, and that kind of very much fed into the concept we wanted to do, which was a lot about raw and a lot about salads, about soups and broths and braising. So these are things that you can do without needing a full service kitchen or extraction or anything heavy. So the beginning was mostly, you know, the struggle of finding suppliers, which is one of the key issues in Berlin, the infrastructure, the supply chain to get good products from the countryside or from organic farmers or from small suppliers. So that was that. And then it was us doing a lot of veg prep.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, you know, obviously you know, the stores, you know, as part of the store kitchen is part of a wider concept, and you know, our ideas and what we wanted to do was you know, kind of slightly dictated by what, you know, they wanted in their space, but very much it kind of been a collaborative experience. And you know, it's about things, you know, like it's a healthy kind of concept, but you know, it's not, you know, health is abstinence, you know, you come in.
But Johnny had also just done a naturopathic,
yeah, I mean, yeah, so exactly.
Coming from a slightly,
yeah, I mean, I you know, I obviously studied a bit of kind of natural.
He'd been in LA for 3 months.
So yeah,
he came
exactly.
back
juicing, just juicing.
He came yeah. back with this.
No,
juice,
I mean, yeah, I don't know whether juicing is like, you know, what you need to do these days, but yeah, I mean, it's about like, you know, things that people want to eat, fresh, you know, delicious. You know, it makes you feel good. It's not heavy. You know, it tastes good.
It's hard to get a salad in this town,
right?
Especially for lunch. There's yeah. not many lunch options, and most of them consist of falafel. Mm. So getting a good, clean, raw salad that isn't going to weigh you down, that doesn't make you feel heavy, but it does have whole grains in it, so it's filling,
yeah.
and it's got spices, so it's got some flavor or acidity or oils, and you know, that's basically what we were trying to.
Yeah, I mean, we tried a lot of different things probably at the beginning, but, you know, as it was dictated by the setup we had, so, you know, we couldn't cook eggs to order in the morning, that kind of stuff, and so it was just, you know, about a lot of, you know, getting nice veg and prepping them nicely and coming up with nice combinations and working with any, like, little local things that we could find that week, some forage stuff, some smoked fish one day, some nice cheese the other day, basically, and just being quite nimble with what we had, and, you know, being able to change the menu from one day to the next, you know, quickly, depending on what we could get, and still kind of making it, you know, delicious. And
we had a very small fridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Yeah. It's good. It means, you know, you're exactly, as Johnny says, you're dynamic, nimble with the produce and spinning things. And
yeah, I mean, even today, if you know, we change the menu, you know, daily, if, you know, I can get nice beetroot, or even I've got excess beetroot in the fridge and we want to use them whilst they're fresh, and you know, we try not to waste anything, so we do a lot of changing of the salads, changing of the lunch menu, just depending on what we've got in the fridge, what we can get, and I think that kind of keeps it kind of fresh and nice and you know, keeps us on our toes as well.
Alright, well, we're going to take a quick musical break and we're going to come back and talk about suppliers and the produce supply chain that you talked about.
Yeah.
We'll be right back on Snacky Tunes.
Is it wicked? And can I lick it? We'll be right back.
So one of the things that you mentioned was, you know, establishing supply chains here and how difficult it was. And I thought it was really interesting, like, you call out your suppliers when you're – it's, like, almost in the same breath as, you know, some people will call out their coffee maker where they get their wine for, but you really go out of your way to, like, name check and shout out everyone. Mm. So it'd be great to hear kind of, like, what you were maybe kind of up against and how you were able to find the suppliers in here, and are they German? Do they come from outside the country? You know, and just the process of how you put your chain together.
I mean, what we're up against is a very kind of established industrial supply chain, as opposed to, I mean, here in Germany, Germans, as a kind of average, spend the least on groceries in Western Europe, even though they have some of the highest income. Supermarkets here don't have that kind of appeal that they do, or fetishization that they have almost now in England or in America. There's no Whole Foods. There's no. They don't care about plenty. Lidl and Aldi, the budget supermarkets here are king, especially somewhere like Berlin, which is a sort of lower household income. So there is a big supply network, but they don't have that kind of selection of produce, which places like, just from like volume of sales, England has done with Marks and Spencers and Tesco's and Sainsbury's, they've really upped their kind of the general game. And so there are incredible farmers around in Brandenburg, around Berlin, but they're also much more focused around local farmers markets. They don't have the delivery into the town, into the city, and so they don't really care about doing that. Mm. They kind of have a very old-fashioned mentality. They're like, we only want to produce what we can, and we sell what we produce already, so why would we, you know, bother driving into Berlin, which is more of a hassle than selling to you? But it took us a while.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are big kind of pan-European or pan-Germany companies that you can order lots of different stuff from, and even organic in the sense of the word, but, you know, often these things have grown under lights in Holland or things like that. To actually get decent tasting heritage varieties, you really have to look around for small producers, and often those guys are the ones that don't really want to, you know, up their production or even deliver into Berlin or work with you guys because they're kind of happy what they're doing, which in a way is really nice, but for us and what we're trying to do, it makes it really difficult. One of the first cheese markets I think I went to, Tommy and I found some really delicious sheep's yogurt from, you know, an hour and a half outside Berlin, and, you know, we were talking to them asking if we could get some, you know, even a small amount each week to use, and they basically just weren't interested. Hmm. Which was kind of shocking for me, having just arrived here, where you know in the countryside in England, everyone's, you know, so into their little artisan products, so they, you know, they're really doing it to, like, get them out there.
Right.
And that was kind of one of the challenges. But I think even in the short period that I've been here, it has got better. Mm. There are more people, more restaurants, more consumers, and more suppliers and producers who are interested in supplying these types of products. And, you know, like, from cheese to veg, to even now some, you know, good butchers and some good fish suppliers, but they still are in no way the same level as you get in London in terms of, like, what you can do with them as a restaurant in terms of getting deliveries and things like that.
Have you found, like, a right combination of words or phrases to say to them for them to be like, okay, we'll, like, produce a little bit more just for you, or is there a philosophy that you present to them that opens their eyes a little bit more, as opposed to maybe some of your early, like, well, I just, why can't I buy it?
Well, I mean, places like Markthaler have really helped, because they've given homes to permanent small suppliers, younger guys like Kumpel and Koyle, which is where we're buying meat for the last few months. You know, it's a very young butcher. He's you know, he's slaughtering dairy herd animals, and he's now got a permanent site there, which is one of the main issues, I suppose, is that they need somewhere to make it financially viable for them to be able to sell all day as well, not just to supply to restaurants, because there aren't enough people like us who want to buy that stuff. Most restaurants and most hotels just want consistency and volume.
Yeah. And low prices.
And very low prices, especially. And the prices aren't low either. You know, beef is very expensive in Germany, for example.
I mean, best thing you can do is get them in for lunch and talk to them and show them what you're cooking. I mean, for instance, where we are in terms of Berlin, Soho House is, kind of perceived as a kind of quite elitist membership kind of community, and that can sometimes be a stumbling block for us. But then if you get them in, and with the food we serve is not expensive, it's quite accessible, we're trying to get people involved and see, like, you know, kind of educate a little bit as much as feed people. And if you can kind of, you know, communicate that to a small supplier and see your passion for what they're giving you, then usually that wins them over, I think.
And then I guess a connection just grow from there, and they tell a friend and they tell
absolutely a I mean, well, you know, there's a sort of the old school chefs is, you know, you find a really good supplier of sheep's cheese and you don't tell anyone. I think nowadays throughout the world, and that's, you know, seen in our guest chef series, is people are much more willing to collaborate, share ideas. People are much more kind of, it's more of a community, the whole restaurant scene, and that's not just in Berlin. You know, it's people, you know, really kind of like, you know, like, oh, I found this guy does really great strawberries, you know, you should call him up, because then if he makes more, then it's going to be easy for us, and you can share deliveries and all this kind of stuff. And that's kind of a lot of what we're trying to do as well here. And you know, you can, when we have guest chefs who come, you know, they you know, like cooking with them, that's like a whole part of it as well. And that's, you know, really interesting as well. So that's, you know, it is getting there, but it's still a lot of work.
Let's talk about the guest chef series. You just had a really good one this past, well, I guess it's Friday, whenever this will air, from Paris. How has that evolved, and how has, like, the guest chef series kind of been received, given the fact that, like, many people are kind of saying it's a more traditional system? It's one thing to establish a restaurant, and then to also to get people to care enough about a guest chef coming in from another scene. How has that been built? I mean, it's obviously very well established in New York and the States.
Yeah. I mean, firstly, on the kind of, from our side, it's the interest from the guest chefs themselves is massive, because everyone wants to come to Berlin. Berlin has this real kind of cachet for everyone from London, from New York, Paris. People want to come to Berlin. It's fun. It's cool. So they're really willing to come here and check out the scene. And then from the Berlin side of things, it's still quite a small scene of chefs and restaurants and food lovers and blogs, and the kind of the hype network isn't as developed as it is in somewhere like New York or London. But because of that, everyone supports each other. So when there are events and when there are dinners, people are really interested, because there's still quite big gaps in the kind of culinary map here in Berlin. So if you bring someone in who's doing something very special, that, you know, we had these guys called Cricket over from London as well, previously.
Cricket with a K.
Yeah, of course.
And they do these Indian-inspired small plates, and that's one of the major gripes for, like, particularly British expats in Berlin, is that there is just no decent Indian food. So that was massively popular. We recently had Taku Sakine of Dersu in Paris, who's the loveliest guy. And he's got this wonderful kind of Franco-Japanese restaurant, so using Japanese techniques and influences, but with a lot of very French produce in Paris. I mean, he wanted to put foie gras on the menu here, but we said it was probably not. It's not the place for foie gras in Berlin.
Is that accepted in Berlin, or just not?
You don't see it on any menu, except for maybe like one of the hotel Michelin restaurants.
Right.
But you do not see foie gras anywhere.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then the sourcing, I mean, obviously, it's like the one kind of trip up of guest chef series is that they're so ultra well known for their ingredients, and sometimes it doesn't work. I've been to a couple that have just, like, fallen very, very flat. how do you kind of help them with that? And then how, I mean, do you have a deep enough supply chain now? Like, we have a guest chef series. Can you help them find this? Or how does that work?
Well, we just give them a list of the things we can get.
Well, like a couple of weeks in advance.
Yeah. so you go back to the chef and say, this is what we have.
Yeah, yes. At the moment, this is nice stuff that we can get. We need to kind of order now for the event next week, or we need to double check things. I mean, we had, you know, with Taku, he wanted some chai flowers. We had kind of, you know, had an offer of chai flowers like the week before, so we said that's great, or we even offered them to him, but then by the time he had come, the chai flowers had gone, but we found some borage flowers, so we used that instead, and it's being nimble again, like we are, and that, you know, hopefully you work with chefs are kind of into that kind of style and don't mind doing that, and so far everyone we've worked with has been. Obviously, you know, there are certain ingredients, like, if, you know, we have a Sichuan weekend next month, there'll be some specific ingredients that we need to get, and so we need to start planning for that now. But, you know, it kind of represents a challenge. It's kind of good for us because it's kind of seeing what gets us, seeing what's, you know, talking to people and seeing what's there, and you know, and yeah.
Also, chefs love bringing their own stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So hand luggage, or even, you know, you can put a lot in an easy to hand luggage.
Yeah.
I mean, they usually have to, you know, they have to check luggage because of their knives, so they just stuff it full of the bits and bobs that you can't get.
It's such an interesting approach because, like, I mean, at least in the States, it's like the chef is like, I want this, and you say, yes, chef, and you get it for them because they bring their food. The one other thing I want to kind of chat with you about is your sugar that you serve, because just looking at it, it caught me by surprise, and Tommy, you'd mentioned about it. So, like, what is your actual sugar, your coffee bar, and then what is, you know, the philosophy behind why you have that?
Yeah, I mean, it's coconut sugar, coconut palm sugar, and we basically try and use no processed ingredients. You know, anyone who reads things about healthy food will see how this sort of momentum has shifted on sugar as opposed to fat as the sort of one of the most evil things in our diet currently. You know, we love fat.
We love
fat, exactly. I mean, good fat, you know, obviously not unprocessed, not kind of fabricated fat. And you know, we don't serve, for instance, we don't serve soya milk in our cafe because of the bad connotations that comes with, and so we also don't serve, you know, processed white sugar, and that is quite a good kind of emblem for our philosophy on ingredients, and the whole thing is, you know, we want to, as much as possible, use unprocessed ingredients, which are, you know, taste great and are good for you, and you know, are unique as well. Even though, you know, lots of people are used to having white sugar in their coffee, and the sugar we use would change the flavor profile, and that people will get upset with that sometimes. But you just have to kind of stick to your guns a bit and explain it to them, and that, yeah, that's it really.
Okay, last question. Call out your favorite veggie supplier. And call the vegetable that they provide for you, and why?
Well, Johannes is a kind of farmer we've kind of been working with, so he would need to be called out because
Johannes Ertz.
Johannes Ertz,
a lovely farm near the Polish border.
Yeah, he's a husband and wife team, and
he picks up from a couple of local.
Yeah,
farms
exactly.
As well.
And you know, he's sort of, you know, like, we kind of sent him a list of stuff that he will grow for us, like heritage varieties of beetroot and different tomatoes and radishes. I think I'm going to talk about radishes because for 2 years I haven't found a decent, spicy, delicious radish in Germany. And he's just sent us a load of different breakfast radishes and red radishes and white radishes, all of which have real nice flavour.
Do you send him seeds?
No, actually, he like located them all because
has to buy his own seeds because of the organic certification.
Yeah, exactly.
So they have to buy it from a certain market.
But yeah, I mean, I love radishes, as you know, especially this time of year, and we finally got.
And
some
he has these
some
beautiful baby turnips as well.
Yeah, actually, yeah,
that raw and cooked, like lightly sautéed. They're one that Johannes Ertz is.
Yeah, it's
amazing. And great salad. It's Mizuna, really spicy.
Yeah, exactly. It's
green,
crispy leaf,
beautiful.
Really nice.
Salad,
I mean, in winter, his market report basically consists of beetroot and apples. So, you know,
that's the problem in northern Germany.
Yeah, yeah, but you know that, you know, we work with that because of the other beautiful products we get throughout the year and kind of thing. And that's the issue, you know, in winter, kind of finding nice leaves and things like that, which is, you know, grown locally or, you know, organic, whether it's certified or not, and tastes good and is interesting, that's, you know, something that really we suffer with in winter. But, you know, you just have to stitch your root vegetables and work.
Start
with what you've got and do your best not to kind of order from too far away and too, you know, sort of from too big suppliers, basically.
Okay. So where can people find you online, location, Instagram, Twitter?
Thestores.com. So thestores.com on as a website, and then Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat is thestores.com, spelt out, lowercase.
Yeah, I mean, we're just about to hopefully launch the Store Kitchen own Instagram. Other than that, you can find our own personal Instagrams, Johnny Collins and Tommy Tannock. And yeah, that's, you know, we're just kind of moving forward to get our own social media of just of the food side of the whole concept, which is great, because, you know, obviously there's a lot of things going on in there. There's music, food, fashion, all that kind of stuff on the main one. And it's kind of nice to have our own kind of like, you know, local output, basically.
Great. Well, thanks for taking the time to do
this.
Thank
you. Thank you, Greg.
We're going to take a quick musical break and then we'll be back with the second part of Snacky Tunes.
Well, did you ever want to be a boy out on the seaboard? All of your possessions below the deck. So when they question what's your direction, you can say south, boy, and know it's bad. Well, did you ever have a day? For a lovely lady to call her own. And then you ask that lady, does anyone really know me? Well, I know those worries like my own strife. 'Cause I've slept alone for most of my life. Well, do you wanna know me, girl? I can see in your eyes a look of pity for the way I live. Well, I may not be striving, but I'm surviving, and I love the nighttime, and I can dig that sunshine. Each morning before I lay and go to bed. But all you know I like an exaggerate my life. But in the tales I tell are some truths themselves. Well, don't you know, Lord, everybody knows. Well, don't you know? Oh, 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 oh. Well, do you know? She said, farewell, boy. You sleep too much there, and it's too cold up here. You promised me Nashville, so I lost my
Have you tasted the world's best cheese? Grand Cru Sirchois is the 2016 World Cheese Champion. Our partners at Roth, Wisconsin make this gorgeous alpine-style cheese in the rolling hills of Greene County, Wisconsin. Grand Cru Sirchois is produced by hand in Swiss copper vats and finished by aging on spruce planks. The quality milk and careful craftsmanship bring out the award-winning light floral notes, nutty undertones, a hint of fruitiness, and a mellow finish. Perfect with Riesling and Muscat, Grand Cru Sirchois is a guaranteed hit for any occasion. Check out their other offerings at rothcheese.com. You'll discover Buttermilk Blue and their newest release, Prairie Sunset, the golden-hued love child of Mimolette and Gouda. You'll also find recipes like the Raclette Reuben and tomato tartlets. Everything you need to know about the world's best cheese is at rothcheese.com.
We're Light Asylum.
We're Light Asylum.
Welcome.
This is our
thank you.
We're gonna. I know it's not fall technically, but this is our first fall show. It's post Labor Day.
End of summer.
So why don't you introduce yourselves?
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Bruno.
Shannon F.
Shannon
and
Bruno.
F. Bruno C.
Bruno C. Welcome to the show. For
Thanks.
The listeners who are not aware of your magic, why don't you give them a little bit of background on who you are or how you came to be?
Bruno and I, we met while touring with some friends in a band called Bunny Rabbit. And that was about, how long has it been now?
4 years ago, 2007.
Yeah. And we bonded while we were stuck in a minivan together. Bruno was performing in Bunny Rabbit, playing guitar, and also doing like his solo project, Bruno and the Dreamies. And I was with a friend, invited to come along after having already been on tour a bunch. But get back in the van. And as the Pumpster and Derriere. And just a funny little booty bass thing. So anyway, we bonded over music interests, and I was like, we should play some music together sometime. It took a couple of years for me to not be touring with Chick Chick Chick, and now I'm just focused on this, and Bruno joined the band like 2 years after I had started it. We've never looked back, and this is the perfect permanent incantation of Light Asylum.
It's a magic themed episode today. All incantations. So I know that you have a big, Shannon, large background in the Brooklyn Museum. We talked how I saw you sing at that magical celebration TV on the radio Union Hall show.
The hottest show ever.
Yeah, in the back
Union
show.
Pool?
Union
yeah.
Pool.
Union Pool,
did
yeah.
I say Union Hall?
Yeah.
Which is where you played on Friday, so. Too many unions. Bruno, what is your... have you from here or where are you from?
I grew up in New Jersey, not too far away, yeah.
Awesome.
Dirty Jersey.
Dirty Jersey? Where do you represent? The North, the Middle, the South?
North.
North?
Yeah. Are you a Flyers fan?
What?
The answer is no.
Are you a Devils fan?
Oh, the New Jersey Devils? No, I'm not a hockey fan, sorry.
Just say you're a Flyers fan.
I'm a Flyers fan.
Awesome.
Amazing.
Awesome.
We just lost some fans.
Yeah. You know, why don't we get a song in?
Or gain some fans.
Because I know that we want to get you guys alive. And they have a great setup in here.
New York.
We continue to, like, redefine what type of live setup we can do in here. Now I know we can do a bunch of synths.
Really pushing the boundaries.
Yeah.
It's a really nice shack you guys got here.
Yeah, this is... Yeah, it's shipping containers, actually.
Way, if these two shipping containers were my apartment, I wouldn't be mad.
No, I wouldn't either. It'd be yours, and it's the future.
I'd put a little shower over here.
Nice.
And the water would be heated from the roof.
I'm a really good subletter if you should ever need a subletter.
Yeah, we can just build like bunk beds.
Looking
like, right
for
into the
someone
walls.
To fill out one half a shipping container. Brooklyn, obviously.
Yeah. $1,000 a month, utilities not included.
What? No. I'm actually looking for a permanent place to live, so if there's anybody out there who knows of a good place and they're
just
not psycho
yeah.
and
you
they want to share
what's
space.
What's the Twitter? They can tweet at you.
Light Asylum.
All right.
Tweet her, like, and she'll probably be on the road, which is a benefit.
Yeah, but I might need a subletter. Depends on how cheap it is. If it's really cheap, then I won't need to get a subletter.
Do you do early morning breakfast and serenading?
Sure, for a decrease in rent.
Awesome. I do that, breakfast and serenading. All right, so what's the first song we're playing?
Dark Allies. Dark Allies!
Yeah! All right, Dark Allies, Light Asylum Live on Snacky Tunes. Thank you.
right.
Woo!
Got real.
Gets a little warm in the shipping container.
I smell funny.
That was great. What was that song called?
Dark Allies.
So you just said that you were looking for Subletter. Where did you come back from?
We spent the summer... Hi, if you just started listening, we're Light Asylum.
Oh, yeah, this is Light Asylum, I'm sorry.
From Brooklyn, New York. I'm going to take your jobs.
Yeah, take my... Yeah, it's cool. All I do is just eat pizza, really.
Yeah. Well, does it pay?
Yeah. Yes.
You know, just in case this doesn't work out. But yeah. I think it's going to work out.
I think it's going to work out. Okay.
We just came back from spending the summer in Berlin, actually.
Ooh.
Hi to all of our Berlin peeps. We miss the hell out of you.
How is Berlin?
I know it's amazing.
I know everyone goes there. Is it as cheap as they say it is?
You know, like everywhere, it's amazing that it's like affecting even the other countries. But the it's just like homogenized everywhere, and there's gentrification everywhere.
Yes.
What was the?
It's world domination.
What did you eat when you were out there?
Lots of margarita pizzas and. Kebabs.
Shawarma.
Lots of shawarma.
Yeah.
There's something about...
Schnitzel?
Actually, they're called Bratwurst? Donners. Or yeah, donors.
There's something about like the European doner that just somehow... I don't understand how they can't recreate it in the States. I don't know what it is.
There's good doner kebabs here in the States.
Not like...
Yeah, I feel it's better there. There's like... The bread is different.
The bread's different.
I mean, there's probably good ones here, but it's probably like to get like a European doner, it's like $10 as opposed to the... You know,
it's
the
like full, 2 euros.
The 2 euros out there, like the massive.
There's something about that European white sauce. It's better than the American white sauce.
Like I think when I was there for New Year's in Berlin, like I had Donner for like our New Year's Eve dinner just because it was so delicious.
How many? what's the largest German beer you had when you were there? How many ounces? 64, 72?
Well, not this time, but other times traveling across Germany. Go to the famous Brauhaus.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The one in Williamsburg wants to be, but, like, seriously, I don't know. Like, what is that?
A liter. No, it's more. It's 750 milliliters.
Okay, so, it's like a 2-liter beer, it's, like, as big as your head.
2-liter beer?
It's, like, as big as your head and heavy. It's like a workout.
Like, yeah, but is it, like, a two-hand lift type
situation? Yeah, for real. Seriously.
That'd be so the double beer mug.
How embarrassing would it be if like you couldn't lift your beer mug? You're like, yeah. I was like, yeah, oh yeah, sure. And you're like, I'm.
That's why I have straws.
Oh yeah, you drink your beer with a straw. Who drinks beer with a straw?
Well, when you can't lift a 2-liter beer sign, you don't have any options. But Berlin was cool. Did you guys go anywhere else in Europe?
Yeah, we actually got to play. I booked a show with some heroes. Of ours. Actually, Bruno and I bonded over this band when I asked him if he knew who the Clan of Zymox was. He was like, I've never met anybody who knew who the Clan of Zymox was. And I was like, cool, we'll play with them someday. And so we did. In Leipzig, we opened for them.
What's like
how was meeting heroes?
It's amazing. They're super sweet, like, awesome people. Couldn't believe it.
So you would recommend meeting your heroes?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I would say it's we
were lucky.
Yeah. I'd definitely say that it's I feel like it's like a pretty solid toss up usually in like the negative direction about meeting your heroes, when you realize they're real people with their own, you know, different intricacies.
Their own issues.
Yeah. Flaws and stuff.
That's going to name my autobiography, Heroes with Issues.
Oh, well, that's
Clan of Zymox is perfect.
Heroes with Issues. All right. So why don't we get another song?
Let's rip another fat one.
Yeah. We'll get the,
What's the name of this one?
A Certain Person.
A Certain Person. Okay, so here we go. Light Asylum live here on Snaggy Tunes.
We came in search of secrets of immortality. To be like God, to be like. And here. More human. This is the end of our adventure. This is the end of our adventure. This is the end of our adventure. This is the end of our adventure.
Woo! Amazing.
Yeah, sorry, that one was a little rough, you guys.
No. I mean,
in the beginning,
you know,
all,
we say,
in the end, it was all.
As we say the same thing about cooking. It's like just don't.
Or life.
Yeah, or life. Don't tell anybody until somebody says something.
Yeah, until somebody says something, just be like, "Yep."
If you see something, say something.
Yeah. See something. So, which of these, which of the songs you've played, are going to be coming out on the new record next year?
Well, I think, you know, a certain person originally to us was like the single,
right?
And then somehow, in this dark day and age, Dark Allies ended up stealing the light. So,
Magic.
Again.
Dark magic.
Stealing the light. But so, yeah, I think we'll have to put a certain person on the full length. Kind of like, you know, TV on the radio and satellite, you know. It came out on the EP, and then it came out on the full length once they dropped that.
They did. They just did an awesome set at Virgin Free Fest.
Cool. We wanted to come, but we were playing a show ourselves that day with with Flying Lotus and Gang Gang Dance at Les Poisson Rouge. That was Thursday, right?
Yeah.
And it was an NYU students only
thing. We were there.
Thing.
We were there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
We're NYU students.
Yep.
Oh.
No.
What's up? Freshman class. Can't wait. 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's up?
Can't wait to turn 21.
If anybody wants to get some wings on my dorm eating points.
I'm going to get a fake ID at Washington Square.
Oh, my God. We're going down to McDougal and 3rd to get my moods, and then we're getting Michigan IDs.
You know, that was the first time I'd ever seen Gang Gang Dance. I mean, heard that. Amazing.
Amazing. Such a really good family.
Really.
Love them.
And the guy, the positive vibes guy.
Yeah.
Taco.
Totally,
Taco.
Yeah. Taco.
Is that Taco. Is he a permanent part of the live
yes.
show?
Yes. That's what he does. He just spreads good vibes.
I mean, this is going to say, but when we were young and into ska and saw the Mighty Mighty Boss Stones, it's like the Ben Carr of the like freak.
The Ben Carr, the Ben Carr of the art world. That's a deep reference.
I was a more of a, yeah. I was like a different kind of ska fan. I think I you know.
Would
I
you
was,
like a second wave?
No, the first wave actually.
Who was in second? I feel like it went like right from like first to third, and like second wave was.
Wasn't second
wave was probably like Madness?
Or Madness. Like, it was the '80s.
What? The first wave. Second wave.
First wave was like Scandalites, like them.
Yeah, yeah, like straight up from Jamaica.
From Jamaica,
yeah.
And the second straight wave up was like the English.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. And that's where I was on the second wave.
You could put
the
Clash.
For sure.
I mean, I wouldn't put the Clash in there. But
they had influences. About England that they were like heavily influenced, like from the Slits, you know, and the Clash,
and then
Selector, all those bands.
Fast forward to third wave when I'm dancing up to Less Than Jake, getting fired on my toilet paper gun.
So what is Gang Gang Dance has like? They're not straight up ska influences, but they're heavily influenced by dub and stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
and they brought the dancers.
I mean, what is dubstep? Sixth wave? Right?
It's actually 18th dimension. So you have the record coming out in spring. We're going to do it backwards because you told me backwards.
Okay.
November, you have the new single coming out?
Shallow Tears. We just re-recorded it and it sounds amazing.
Why the re-record?
You know, just to give the fans something new. And the first one is straight up a demo we recorded in a space as big as your radio space.
Yeah, loft.
Yeah.
Loft apartment.
Like, imagine your bathroom in...
the Boar's Head?
Bushwick.
Yeah.
Or the Boar's Head.
Right, and then you have that size. And then you have something special coming out in October.
October is the Mexican 100th release from the record label Mexican Summer, which is a...
By the way, shout out to Mexican Summer and to Jess for setting this up.
Yeah, thanks, Jess.
Thanks, Jess.
Thanks, Mexican Summer.
I can't believe they've already had 100.
Woo!
Amazing.
Congratulations. That'll be out in October, and that's a split produced on both sides by Ford and Low Patton, formerly known as Games.
Yeah.
And, so one track with myself... Truly, and then also a lovely lady from a band of the same name, Tamarin.
Amazing.
Comes out in October.
We're going to get you to play one more song.
Okay.
We want to say thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having
me. To
us.
Light Asylum. Do you want to give us all the like the very special, like where to find, where to email, where to follow?
Oh, cool. You can just, if you have any inquiries about booking, you can go to our man, Avery McTaggart at the Agency Group in the U.S. We're still looking for a European booking agent. If you just want to write us and tell us how much you love or hate us, you can write us at lightasylummusic@gmail.com.
Don't send hate mail.
Don't hate, though.
Come on.
Because we don't have time for it.
Honestly.
Life is short, and we don't have time for it. And we'll just, like, not even open it. Yeah. No, kidding.
What if they what if they put the subject line, like, we love you, and you open up, and it's
like,
not
fuck that. It. Fuck. I mean, oh, can I say it? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's the internet.
You got 8 seconds to delete that. And then if you want to just, like, see a discog, once we, you know, you can go to MexicanSummer.com, and you can also go to Academy Records or Other Music to buy physical copies of our
I don't understand.
EP on vinyl. You don't understand?
Oh, okay, vinyl. Okay.
Who took the we photo have CDs on the with a really, EP cover?
Our friend Matthew Heiss shot that, and he's a really great amazing fashion photographer, Matthew Heiss.
And the next show?
The next show is
Swarthmore College.
Swarthmore College in Pittsburgh.
The Earthworms.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's a
Earthworms. How do you know that?
Because you rearrange the letters. Earthworms. That's their school.
Yeah. All right.
Cool. Yeah. Wow. All right, well, thank you. And and if you have an apartment for Shannon, you can hit him up on Twitter at lightasylum. All right. So
I don't want to pay that booking fee, whatever that crap is.
Yeah.
And I want to stay in Williamsburg because I've been here for 10 years, and I think I just deserve to be able to stay.
I would agree. What's the name of the last song you're playing?
End
of Days.
End of Days.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for listening to Snacky Tunes. We have VHS or Beta DJing next week, and we'll be back with more episodes. Here we go with Light Asylum. Take it out. We'll be right back.
talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
For listening.